You're listening to a special edition of Access Utah. We're now in the second hour of this special program. Thanks for your response. We are talking about the decision announced last night. The Outdoor Industry Association has announced that after next year, Salt Lake City will no longer host the Outdoor Retailer Show, which is called Utah Home for 20 years. Some companies like Patagonia said they would not participate in the shows because of Utah legislature's opposition to the new Bears Ears National Monument and the legislature's desire to shrink the size of Grand Staircase Escalator National Monument. Just a couple of examples that the companies like Patagonia cited, saying that their view is now incompatible with the Utah's elected officials' views, and so the Outdoor Industry Association is pulling out. This at stake is an estimated at least $50 million annually, probably more, according to a study by Visit Salt Lake and the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute. Also, this highlights some very important and impactful issues, such as who should control the lands, who should manage the lands. And we're asking you, is what is best for the economies of various adjacent national parks and monuments? Is it tourism, outdoor recreation? Is it extractive industries? Is it ranching, something else? Can these coexist? And we are entertaining your email to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com, or you could call us. I'd love to get your comment, your perspective on this. 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. We have with us writer and photographer Stephen Trimble, and Mr. Trimble joins us now into the second hour. Stephen Trimble, you have some experience, at least as a citizen of one of the areas impacted, a gateway community, right? You live at least part-time in Wayne County, is it?
That's right, in Torrey.
So, I mean, you've seen at least as a citizen there, impact of national park. Tourism is very important there in Wayne County.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that's interesting, I've been working on an anthology of Capitol Reef writing that University of Utah Press will publish next year. And I've been doing a lot of research going back into the history of the park at Capitol Reef. And one thing that struck me is that the population of Wayne County is essentially stable. You know, there were 2,500 people there in the 1940s. And they're barely more than that now, maybe 2,600, 2,700. You know, that is absolute testimony to the fact that these places are simply not going to boom, but they can be stable. And as the economy shifts away from the traditional ranching economy, which, you know, frankly, really no longer supports very many people at all, and as we realize that we can't just go through yet another boom and pump out the uranium or coal or oil and leave a swath of destruction behind us, the stable economy is going to be built on incredible landscapes, archaeological resources, recreation. You know, the towns over in Garfield County are absolutely up in arms about the idea that Grand Staircase Escalante will be reduced in size, and they've got the attention of the Garfield County Commission, who postponed a vote to decide whether or not they were going to support the resolution that came out of the legislature calling for reducing the size of the monument. If you talk to business owners in Escalante or Boulder, they're thriving because of tourism, and they're trying to get the officials to listen to them. You know, there's a huge gap between the people and the elected officials that just hate the federal government. This year's State of the Rockies poll from Colorado College polled people all over the four corner states and the Mountain West, and they found 80% of those people support national monument designations. And within Utah, 47% supported Bears Ears. Only 32% said no. And those are polls of people, not politicians. So I think that there's this huge gap between the Speaker of the Utah House in the legislature, who voiced his real hatred of the federal government in the resolution that he pushed through the legislature. And if you go back to that resolution, it's filled with misinformation and cherry-picking of facts.
By the way, just for the listeners know, we did put out many calls today. We've previously been working on a program and had decided to do it next week, but with this breaking news, we decided to move it up to today. Well, we have put out calls to the governor's office, various Republican lawmakers, and others, and we're not able to hear back from them. So just wanted to put that out there. Also, We did some recent reporting on the controversy there in Garfield County, and a recent meeting the Garfield County Commission had. And we received a response from a gentleman who we had arranged to have come on today, but we were having phone problems and kind of playing phone tag, not able to bring him on at this point. But so I just wanted to get to part of his perspective here, which I think would be valuable. He's just reading one paragraph from a recent letter that he wrote us, or email. He says, when the monument, talking about Grand Staircase Escalante, was designated in 1996, the population was near 1,000. We had 140 students in the high school. Now has 750 people and 60 students, barely. Since 1996, Garfield County livestock production has decreased by 70%, timber production by 90%, gas and oil production has essentially disappeared. 2 years ago, a natural gas company expressed interest in exploring the Escalante area. Environmentalists threatened lawsuits. The company left town. 10 years ago, the local irrigation company tried to construct a new irrigation dam. Environmentalists stopped that using the same tactic. Now, as a result, we face a serious water situation. He goes on to say this is a serious situation negatively impacting the Escalante area, at least in his view. Stephen Trimble, you previously had cited statistics and views from other residents of Garfield County that they feel the monument has been a boon. There is a divide, at least in opinion, about this, the economic impact.
Yeah, we had a divide. And I'm sure that those are real numbers for the school district, but they don't have a lot to do with the national monument. It has to do with the changing national economy. And in terms of grazing, you know, if you go back and look at the Grand Staircase proclamation and management plan, it's very clear grazing will continue, but it will be managed. And with years of drought, the monument and the local BLM administrators had to decrease the number of cows on that land. I believe they're the same number of cheese. And so there were no... they haven't been retiring grazing permits. They haven't been excluding permittees from the monument. But with drought, you've got to reduce the number of cows because they have too much impact on the land. And they would make those same decisions on a random BLM district as they would in the national monument. So those facts do not necessarily reflect monument designation. And as the rural West and the rural Midwest faces changes that are sweeping and really tied to the international economy, they look for scapegoats. And the monument is a convenient scapegoat, but it doesn't explain a lot of what's happening there. And also, I'd like to point out that the folks who oppose national monument designations on public land, over time, will often come to regret their opposition. Up in Wyoming, back in the 50s, when the Rockefeller family donated land for a Jackson Hole National Monument, and Park Service accepted that land, added to it, it's a presidential executive order under the Antiquities Act that made the Wyoming governor, Cliff Hansen, and Alan Simpson, who was beginning his career as a member of Congress, made them so angry that they managed to pass a bill through Congress prohibiting any president from using the Antiquities Act in Wyoming. And both of those guys, Cliff Hansen and Alan Simpson, said later in their lives that they regretted that decision. And, of course, Jackson Hole National Monument was eventually incorporated as part of Grand Teton National Park, which is an enormous contributor toward the Wyoming economy. In southern Utah, when President Johnson established a much larger Capitol Reef. Capitol Reef National Monument was originally established in the 30s, and using the administration, LBJ expanded Capitol Reef by six times. The Boulder immediately renamed themselves Johnson's Folly in protest. But if you went and talked to the business owners in Boulder today, the women who run Hell's Backbone Grill, or the owners of Mount Fudge or Burr Trail Grill, or the Boulder Mountain touring companies and outposts, I think you'll find that they are thrilled with nearby Capitol Reef and Grand Staircase. That's what brings people there down Highway 12 to support their businesses.
Stephen, you're cutting out just very slightly. I want to maybe put the telephone a little closer to your mouth there. I don't know if you're on the move, but it's not too bad yet, but it's kind of cutting out a little bit. Let's go to a. By the way, I'm Stephen Trimble, writer and photographer, and lives in Torrey, I think, and also in Salt Lake City. You can find him at stephentrimble.net, and we're talking about Outdoor Industry Association's decision to pull the Outdoor Retailer Show out of Utah. Our next caller is Dave in Newton. Dave, glad you called. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I guess my question would be, who is the legislature really representing? It seems to me that they're probably getting a lot of campaign contributions and that kind of stuff from the extractive industries. And are they really, you know, looking to line their own pockets, turning away, you know, $50 million of money that would go to the state to line their own pockets with contributions from these extractive industries?
We'll put that question out there. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Stephen Trimble, what do you think? We've had callers in the previous hour. To emailers as well, talk about that, express skepticism that, or at least state that the legislature is not representing them. Legislators, I think are representing a swath of Utahns who do have heartburn with increased designation, national monuments, etc.
Well, yeah, you can certainly find people that are upset about those designations. I think if they knew more about the designations, if they read the proclamation and listened to the tribal people at Bears Ears, they would probably begin to think differently. The people who have pushed toward Bears Ears, that energy was coming from the Intertribal Coalition, and they're enormously moving in what they say about the land. But it's the absolute of seeing the land as commodity. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a long tradition in Utah and in the pioneering culture in Utah to make the desert blossom like the rose. And a lot of people define that as economic development and using the land in any way possible to make money. It's very much the capitalistic approach to things. And the Indian people, the tribal people, are the exact opposite of that. And I think there are public lands that can be multiple use and use a little bit of those lands for all these different purposes, and there's some require conservation.
Stephen, you're cutting out a little more right then.
You may have to. There's not much I can do about it. Okay. I'm in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, okay. All right. we'll go with it. And we really appreciate you being with us. Next up is Katie Lee Coven in Logan. This is what she says by email. It's hypocritical for Utah governor and his Republican legislators to push for control of lands, presumably to have the option to develop these areas for economic development, while knowing these actions will negatively impact outdoor industry businesses wanting to make Utah their home and continuing to host the retailer show. From an environmental and an economic growth standpoint, Utah's leaders need to take the long view and consider the type of economic growth they want for their citizens instead of drawing the line in the sand for purely political purposes. Legislators need to be looking at their state, the resources it offers, and then make responsible decisions about the opportunities for economic growth that are in alignment with our resources. Policy positions based on party lines is just bad policy, and the citizens are the ones who are paying for it. That's Katie Lee Coven and Logan. Stephen, that interesting comment. Legislators need to decide the type of economic growth they want.
It's their values. And a lot of the legislators, come out of the real estate industry. And the ties to the extractive industries in terms of their donations are clear. But it's really their basic value. You know, no one is bribing them. They simply agree with the idea that the best and highest use of the land is to make as much money as possible from it. And it's in direct opposition to conservation and stewardship and looking at the long view, as the Indian people would say, into the seventh generation.
Let's go to our next email. This is from Bob Hartman in Escalante. And he says, here in Escalante, there is a building boom with new accommodations for the thousands of people who come to the area. RV parks, lodges, yurts, renovated pioneer homes are under construction or opening this year. This is the free market response to taking advantage of the new resource. Visitors from across the country and around the world. We have an exciting thing going on here and invite people to come and spend some time with us. The anti-public lands ideology of the governor and the legislature is an anti-small business stance. Those of us who are investing in the future here in southern Utah are the real victims of their short-sighted attack on our resources here. Salt Lake City is a big place, and maybe losing the outdoor recreation show and the $40 million it brings in is small potatoes. But every year we can bring into rural towns like Escalante, every dollar we can bring into rural towns like Escalante is a big one. That's Bob in Escalante. And he's stating what I think a lot of our listeners are saying, that this tourism economy is good and it is the future.
That makes sense. And the other thing that we should think about is dispersing all of those folks that are coming to Utah. You know, Zion National Park is just being driven into the ground by boots and people and intense tourism. The Mighty Five tourism marketing campaign has been exceedingly successful. And I keep meeting people who are coming to Utah to tick off all five of those parks. And the easiest one to get to when they fly into Las Vegas is Zion. Their visitation has gone sky high. The shuttle bus system is now inadequate. So what are they going to do? Well, one thing that the state can do is to help those businesses in other small towns flourish and thrive by dispersing a lot of that tourism across southern Utah into the vast country in Grand Staircase and Bears Ears. And that really would be good for everybody.
Let's go to our next emailer, who's emailed to upraxis@gmail.com. Again, we're talking about the outdoor retailer show leaving Utah and the ramifications and related issues. And we have with us on the line, we appreciate him taking the time to be with us, especially since he's out. Where'd you say you were, Stephen?
I'm doing field work in Petrified Forest National Park.
Petrified Forest National Park. So thank you very much for joining us from out there. Next up is Jack Green in Smithfield. He says, considering our federal public lands are major contributors to our quality of life, economy, and national international image, and our Utah and U.S. congressmen are working hard and spending millions to wrestle them free from our federal control, please consider a much better path. And yes, we wish the best for our rural communities, no less than for our urban communities. We want them to have a stable, healthy economy and high quality of life. The solar energy industry now employs over twice as many Utahns as does the coal mining industry. This is a stable, clean industry that could offer thousands of jobs around the state, combined with wind, geothermal, biomass energy forms. Utah has barely scratched the surface on this potential job market. Representative Bishop has expressed interest in developing renewable energy corridors on some of our public lands, which would assist in connecting us to the state and national grid. Representative Bishop is also interested in working with farmers and ranchers to better manage their grazing and crop production lands for carbon sequestration. Sub-government agencies and organizations are offering economic incentives for these practices. Lastly, if Utah were to assume ownership for federal lands, there would be a steep price tag associated with their management, which would go well beyond the revenue they might produce. I worked 13 seasons with the U.S. Forest Service and observed many instances where our state lands lack the resources to maintain their ecological health, unlike adjacent federal lands. Legislators, be careful what you wish for. That's Jack Green in Smithfield. Stephen Trimble, interesting, renewables. And we've heard about renewables for a long time and renewables jobs. And I don't know whether that promise has been realized. Is that close, do you think? Is that going to be a big sector of the economy going forward?
Well, I think it inevitably will be as we move away from coal and move toward renewables. You know, I think a lot of the growth is more likely along the Wasatch Front in our urban areas, getting rooftop solar on people's homes. We should have solar panels on every building in the state, really. There's zero impact on that. It generates lots of energy. You don't have to think about the environmental impacts of vast solar farms in the desert and the impact on wildlife that those might have. The legislature is not listening to the people and trying to withdraw rebates and support for the solar industry and for putting solar panels on your own roof. So a lot of our conversation, Tom, comes down to what can an individual do? How do we express our feelings, our values, our positions to the people that we have elected? And we have to speak up. We have to contact people who are in the legislature who represent us and tell them that we want support for the solar industry much more than we want support for the oil and gas industry. We have to contact the Secretary of Interior, designate Zinke, when he comes out, and make sure that he listens to the Intertribal Coalition, along with the governor and the Speaker of the House and the congressional delegation. We need to resist the agenda of the new administration that attacks public lands and puts someone in charge of the EPA who is determined to dismantle the EPA. We need to join groups like Indivisible to do so. So there are a lot of choices we have right now to make our voices heard.
Let's go to our next emailer, who is Rebecca McFall in Cache Valley. She says, in response to this, and in my email to our listeners and also on air here, I quoted from the Deseret News, Paul Edwards, Governor's Deputy Chief of Staff, said, quote, "It smacks of gross ingratitude to a community that has embraced the outdoor retailer show, subsidizing success and expansion through direct investment, let alone extraordinary hospitality," end quote. So that's Paul Edwards, Governor's Deputy Chief of Staff. And so this is the response to that from Rebecca. She says, the Governor's Deputy Chief of Staff scolding underlines how tone-deaf the government has become. We have an administration that rejects the scientific consensus on climate change and is looking to, quote-unquote, develop our public lands for extractive industries. The fundamental economy is nature. And as polite as the policymakers imagine they've been, their actions toward this economy continue to be reckless and short-sighted. I, for one, appreciate the signal the outdoor retailers are sending in language that this administration might understand. Thank you, Rebecca McFall. That's her comment. This idea, Stephen Trimble, do you agree that Utah legislators have been tone-deaf to, at least to Rebecca and people who think like her?
Yeah, of course they have. And it's really hard to get them to listen. I've gone up to, incidentally, can you hear me? Am I breaking up too badly?
No, you're pretty good right now.
Pretty good right now, okay. You know, citizens can go to the legislature and go to hearings and make their voices heard. And I have often seen the legislators virtually ignore the citizens who are testifying or cut them off. They're especially rude and critical of women who speak up, and especially of Native women. You know, it's really kind of appalling. I would ask the legislators to at least be polite, and they don't always do that. So it's frustrating, but we need to show up. We need to be there. We need to speak.
Our next email comes from Mike Berkeley in Ivins, Utah. Mike says, Utah Republican politicians have stated that this national monument was, quote, rammed down our throats, end quote, and a very small percentage of San Juan County residents, including Native American tribes, actually support the national monument. First of all, this process has been going on for decades, and certainly over the last six or so years. Much public input, studies, meetings, and attempts to work something out that both sides would have input. So it was not just something Obama just rammed down throats. Plus, from everything I've read and heard, say the vast majority of Native Americans who live in San Juan County support the monument, and actually the five tribes who can say they live in that area support, not to mention the dozens of tribes from across the country. But you wouldn't know this by listening to our U.S. senators and other U.S. and state Republican officials. Bears Ears and Gold Butte National Monuments have not just beautiful landscapes, they're rich in archaeological history. If any public land deserves protection under the Antiquities Act, this is it. Does Governor Herbert's office actually believe that the majority of Utahns and majority of Native Americans in San Juan County are against this? And do they really believe it was, quote, rammed down our throats, end quote? Rob Bishop's PLI, he tried to get this through Congress. It's just a big wish list for the extraction industry. That's Mike Berkeley in Ivins. What do you think, Stephen Trimble?
Well, Mike is exactly right. And if you look at real numbers for support from the tribes, they're very different from the numbers that the delegation and the governor use. You know, the delegation and the governor are always talking about Rebecca Benally, who was a Navajo woman who was a county commissioner in San Juan County. And Rebecca Benally agrees with the governor and repeats all of the same misinformation that the congressional delegation says. But she does not speak for the tribes. She does not speak for Navajo people. She speaks only for her family, really, and the constituents that elected her. San Juan County is more than half Native American, more than half Navajo, because the Utes number very few, so it's really Navajo that we're talking about. 90% of those Navajo people support Bears Ears National Monument. That number comes from Utah Dene Pakea, who has been working on the ground for more than 6 years, documenting these sacred sites with Navajo elders, dozens of interviews with Navajo elders. 6 of the 7 chapter houses on the Navajo reservation within Utah support Bears Ears. The Navajo Tribal Council supports Bears Ears unanimously in a vote. The Intertribal Council, Intertribal Coalition, includes the 5 tribes most intimately associated with the monument, and obviously all of those official sovereign governments of those tribes support the monument, along with the 30 other tribes in the region with ties to the land, and the hundreds of tribes in the National Congress of American Indians. There's essentially unanimous support for the monument in Indian country. And if you look at the resolution passed by the legislature or the rhetoric that comes from our senators and congressmen and governor, they simply don't refer to any of that. It's an enormous amount of disrespect toward tribes, and it shows a real lack of understanding of Native sovereignty.
Let's go to our next email. By the way, you're listening to a special edition of Access Utah. We're responding to the Outdoor Industry Association's announcement just last night that they are pulling the Outdoor Retailer Show out of Utah after 20 years. And they cite incompatibility in views of many of their retailers or companies, participating companies, with the views of elected officials in Utah. And we're getting your response. Love to have your response at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com, or you can call us to 800-826-1495. Talking about these very important issues, we have with us writer and photographer Stephen Trimble. You can find more about him at stephentrimble.net, and he's joining us from a Petrified Forest National Park. So we appreciate him taking the time to be with us. We go next to Rory in Moab. He says, driving into Moab yesterday, I counted from the river to town at least 7 large motels and RV parks. In town, more motels, restaurants, bars, a new Hilton, 2 new motels, a convention center under construction, more of the same on the south side. There's not a restaurant or hotel here that doesn't have trouble getting enough people to fill the jobs it already has. I think Monticello and Blanding together have 4 or 5 hotels, a few restaurants, no bars. I was in Escalante last year on the edge of Grand Staircase. I didn't see 1 ATV or 4x4 rental. There are several in Moab. It's not parks and monuments that retard rural economies. It's lack of initiative and outdated vision. It's politicians they keep electing to protect the losing and uneven economic resource extraction strategies. If Blanding, Escalante, Richfield, and Panguitch want better economies, they need to get their heads on straight and elect real forward-looking politicians to state and federal offices. The political party is irrelevant. The jobs aren't. Please, fellow Utahns, quit cutting off your noses in spite of your face. Stephen Trimble, what do you think of that?
Again, I think he should run for city council or county commission. If he lives at the very south end of the Moab Valley, he can run for San Juan County Commission. That's absolutely true. And again, we need to just encourage that kind of forward thinking. You know, I have to think that the OR must have made the right decision here, because of all the time you're giving these people to write in their comments that are so well put, so well said. Maybe we should have an annual event on your show, Tom, every year to mark the anniversary of when the OR chose to leave Utah and bring all of these issues up for conversation and highlight the same argument that I'm sure we're going to continue to have.
Yeah, and some of these, yeah, this is a big development, an ongoing argument that we've been having in the public space, right? I'll throw that out to listeners, what you'd like to do there. Just to follow up on Rory's comment, the argument against the tourism economy, outdoor rec economy that I've heard is, as we've been doing some reporting, and we've heard this on this show a bit, some people are saying, I can't support my family on you know, motel maid or retailer job the way I used to be able to support a family in an extractive industry or whatever it may be.
Well, you have to take a bigger view. I mentioned Headwaters Economics earlier. If you go to their website, you'll be able to access a lot of interesting reports about how the rural economy, what they call the amenity economy, works in the rural West. And it isn't just the jobs in the actual tourist sites, the guiding jobs or the jobs in restaurants or motels. but it's the kind of people that move to a place that is preserving its land rather than drilling its land. And a lot of those folks don't necessarily generate jobs, but they bring money to the county in unearned income. They're retirees. They're people who are working remotely. You know, you can work at many jobs via the internet from just about anywhere these days. Those people increase the coffers of counties, and there's more money for all of the things that your last message described, a new convention center in Moab. You know, you need money to do those kinds of things, and that money doesn't necessarily just come from people passing through. It comes from people moving to the glorious spots in southern Utah, and they may not have a local job. They may have a job that is elsewhere, or they may be living on retirement funds, but they're bringing in property tax for their lovely new homes. They are going out to dinner. They are bringing friends to visit. They're good for the place.
Let's go to another, and by the way, let me ask you, Stephen, we've had you on for, I think, a good hour. Are you still okay to be on with us? We'll let you go if you need to go.
I can talk to you for a few minutes more if you don't have anyone else that you need to get on.
Okay. Well, we just have, I think, three more emails, and then we'll probably close here. But
we
didn't want to keep you past, past year. I know you're doing some work out there in the Petrified National Forest stuff, so didn't want to keep you from that. But do appreciate
that's right.
You
I've got to go photograph all these beautiful petrified logs here shortly.
Okay, yeah. Good work if you can get it, right?
Okay.
So yeah, we'll close in about 5 minutes here. So the next up is from James. James says, he quotes Paul Edwards, and I'll quote this again, Governor's Deputy Chief of Staff. It smacks of gross ingratitude to a community that's embraced the outdoor retailer show, subsidizing success and expansion through direct investment, let alone extraordinary hospitality. And then James says, my comment, well, boo-hoo, in these Trumpian times where everything is transactional and about a deal to be made, Utah loses. I'm sorry to see the show go, but Mr. Edwards lies in bed of Republicanism. Quote, I am in it for myself and I can grab what I want, end quote. So he needs to grow up. Why were we subsidizing, quote-unquote, this effort and not, say, expanding health care or expanding services to families with special needs kids? So that's James's quote. By the way, we did try to get someone on from the governor's office. We're unsuccessful in doing that. We'll still try to get the governor's comment on at a future time so he can speak for himself there. Next up is Warren. Warren says, I should not be writing this and do not expect any reaction. So, well, you sent it to our station email here, so we'll read it anyway. Warren says, you cannot imagine how upset this old timer is when he learned about the millions and millions of dollars we Westerners pay out to environmental groups that make a living suing the federal government and at our expense. Yes, make a million. It can be said that we're talking about apples and oranges, but in my pinheaded mind, if it's outdoors, it's related. Whine about one issue, ignore another. $50 million? Always wondered about numbers like that, reminiscent of the film and entertainment industry incentive programs who boast in how much they contribute to domestic wealth. It's an exaggeration, and if they're so good, then they should be on their own like any other industry. That's Warren. First of all, I guess, Stephen, he's disputing the $50,000 $50 million per year. That's, by the way, comes from a study by Visit Utah, Visit Salt Lake, and the Kim C. Gardner Policy Institute. He's saying industries ought to stand on their own.
Well, the legislature is pretty inconsistent about that. You know, they provide lots of support for extractive industry, and they spend a lot of money on lawyers and consultants who are wasting our money to delist the wolf or come up with some, you know, strange legal argument that public land should be transferred to the states. There's a lot of taxpayer money wasted on dead ends. And there's also a frequent line that you see in the anti-public lands rhetoric that suggests that conservationists are paying people to protest and the conservationists are well-heeled and the conservation organizations are paying everyone who works for them vast amounts of money. You know, it's simply not true. If you look up how much folks make in conservation organizations versus how much folks make looking for large corporations, it's obviously quite different. It's just another way to demonize them in the way that the right-wing press demonizes virtually every progressive cause and gradually shifts public opinion to believe those things even when they're not true.
Let's go to the last email that we have here, and then I had a caller who didn't want to go on the air. I have a quick question. Then we'll give Stephen Trimble the last word on this, and appreciate him being with us. This is a comment from Clint. Clint says, although Utah is one-sided on the political spectrum, I believe that the state is full of intelligent people that love and respect public lands for the most part. We are a people who love the outdoors, so I believe that the residents of Utah recognize the unique geology that we have and the importance of protecting some of these lands. We also recognize that many of our communities rely on tourism. However, much of our economy and communities rely on the gas and oil field industry. I think our state leaders recognize the importance of both views and try to find a good middle ground to protect public lands and increase tourism while at the same time trying to support oil and gas industry. How do we get to the point that our state leaders and federal leaders are working together to compromise and find a solution that works for everybody? That's Clint.
That's the big question. He's much more optimistic about the leaders looking for common ground. I don't think that they're spending much time doing that. But as I said earlier, I think the common ground exists. And I think the best way to find it is to get on the land together. And when I say together, I mean everyone from, you know, those folks who are calling and emailing you, regular citizens, to conservationists and tribes and developers and politicians, and get everybody out there talking with each other, and compromise can be found, just as it could be in the United States Congress, in a way that we no longer are able to reach.
And I think we all can agree, we wish, we hope compromise, good compromise, that would at least please in parts all sides could be found.
You know, the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance has actually worked out several deals with energy corporations that were genuine compromises. They found places that they were willing to agree on where drilling could happen, and the corporations agreed to leave some other places alone and stay away from those places. Those are remarkable models. It can happen.
We had one listener who didn't want to go there, but had, and I hope I can get their question in accurately. We have done some reporting here at UPR and have had some comments, just anecdotally, from traditional industries, in this case, ranchers, who have said, you know, with designation of national monuments and rules as they are set up, that in some cases, outdoor retailers have gotten permits to go onto public lands, but they have not been able to get grazing permits, or they can't take their livestock onto public lands, and they're saying, you know, at least in their area, it's multiple use is not working, at least not working for them, and they say outdoor retailers are getting preferential treatment in some areas.
Well, multiple use is a term that gets redefined as those uses change. You know, in Wayne County, I know that there are only about 5 families that make a living full-time from livestock, from ranching. There's a tradition in rural Utah for lots of people to put a few cows out on the land, but they're not making a lot of money from it. It's more of a traditional part of the culture. And this is dry country, and in increasingly dry years with climate change having the Colorado Plateau right in its bullseye. If you look at projections of climate change in the West, Utah looks pretty red in those projections. There will be fewer and fewer cows on the land because the federal agencies managing those public lands will be forced to limit the number of cows grazing as the grazing potential decreases, as the fuel and feed for those cows begins to disappear in drought. At the same time, people still are going to want to go to those places to recreate, and we need to take advantage of them and have them make a financial contribution, both to the public lands and to the local communities. It's an ongoing conversation. We started the conversation about conservation in southern Utah with the first designation of national monuments at the beginning of the 20th century. And we continued with the proposed Escalante National Monument that would have preserved much of southern Utah and probably prevented the building of Glen Canyon Dam in the 1930s. And we keep going back to those places with ideas for conservation and protection because they're so remarkable. And the more people who come there and share them and come to understand them and appreciate them, the more fiercely they will act to protect them from all over the world. And so we have to listen to them. It isn't just land that belongs to Utah. It belongs to everyone. And we've got to keep the conversation going. That's the key thing. And learn from each other. And that is indeed my hope for the future.
We will leave it there, a good place to end it, and we will indeed here at UPR try to keep the conversation going. Stephen Trimble, appreciate so much you taking the time. It's much longer time than we initially told you, and for coming on with such short notice. We appreciate you being on with us.
Well, it was a pleasure to have this chance to keep the conversation going, Tom.
Okay, great. Good luck out there in the Petrified National Park, I'm sure we'll see some of those photographs at some point.
Yes, indeed. I'm working on an update of a road guide to petrified forests that I first published back in the Pleistocene in 1984.
And, of course, the books are all available. Go to steventrimble.net, and you're working on a couple of books, I understand, so we'll be seeing those as well.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, the next one out will be Red Rock Stories from Torrey House Press, a collection of essays that I edited about public lands in Utah.
Okay, we'll look forward to seeing that. Stephen Trimble has been with us. Thank you so much. And earlier in the first hour, we had with us Peter Kroon, chairman of the Utah Democratic Party. And thanks so much to you for responding to the program. Keep the conversation going, as Stephen says, by email to upraxis@gmail.com. This has been a special edition of Access Utah. Thanks so much for listening.